Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo, and we are going to be talking about something that I think is so appropriate for this season. We are coming into the most wonderful holiday. It's Christmas, and gee whiz, it's just sometimes good just to sit back and relax, maybe have a cup of hot cocoa, and think about what the season is all about. And my guest today, Cassandra Veaton, has been a participant in putting together a book called Living Deeply, The Art and Science of Transformation in Everyday Life. Cassandra, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. It's wonderful to be here.
Well, I felt that the subject matter was so in keeping with the season because it's not just all about Santa Claus and the giving of gifts. It's actually about a feeling that can involve what might be a word that is so often used, we don't really look at the context of it in its real form, and that's the word of transformation, being able to go through the changes that we need to do and come out of them feeling empowered instead of disempowered. Now, this book was put together from comments made from a number of different people, and Marilyn Mandela Schultz was a part of it, and Tina Amorek also was. Tell us, how did the three of you choose this topic? What brought you together, and what's the association with noetic science?
Well, in the very beginning, actually, the work on transformation, the research on transformation, started at the Institute of Noetic Sciences long before I got there. I started working there in 2001, and Tina started working there in 2002, and Marilyn was there a few years before that. And this work really started when a wealthy businessman named Dick Gunther came to our campus. And he was someone who early in his life was very successful in his career and business. He had a real sharp eye for how to conduct business and make money, and found himself in a situation where I'd say he was probably pretty happy in general, but he wasn't quite sure what was missing in his life. And he was invited to attend a session at Esalen, which I'm sure you've heard of and many of your listeners have heard of, is a conference center on the West Coast where lots of people have engaged in transformative workshops and had transformative experiences. But he had an experience on the deck at Esalen where he felt he was looking at the waves and the ocean and the mountains and the birds and the clouds and the sun filtering through the leaves, and felt a very deep sense of oneness and connection with everything he was seeing. And he describes it as saying it's as though he was living in a two-dimensional world before that, and in the linear dimension, and now he was living in a three-dimensional world and even more, and everything took on a richness and a color and a meaning and a kind of sparkle that hadn't been there before. And it's an experience that stayed with him and, in fact, has supported a lot of the work he's done since that time, major work in altruistic and philanthropic pursuits that have eased a lot of suffering for a lot of people around the world. And he wanted to find out what happened to him and how could we make it happen for other people. So he came to visit Marilyn and said, you know, this is what I want to support you studying. And so they got started, and first they just asked the Noetic Sciences membership to send in their own stories of transformation. They looked at those stories and analyzed them in a qualitative fashion and found that although there were a lot of differences between people's stories of transformation, there were also a lot of similarities, and that many, many people had had that experience of really feeling like their life had been divided into two parts, the part before the transformation and the part after. And then that there was an ongoing process of transformation that continued, and sort of like the hero's journey. And so they continued the research by bringing together several teachers of transformative processes, both religious leaders and spiritual teachers, people who were teaching transformative programs primarily out here in the Bay Area. And they had focus groups where each person talked about their view on the transformative process. And And they got the same feeling that even though the different traditions and methods and techniques were different, that there were commonalities among all of these traditions that could be discerned regarding what facilitates transformation and what inhibits it and kind of what promotes it. And that's when I came on board, and at that point we were thinking about doing a study where we followed people over time to see during their transformational practices what happened. And we realized that we still didn't really know enough about the process to ask accurate questions to people who were going through it. And so we stepped back and did a series of two-hour interviews with 60 masters, teachers, spiritual leaders, people who had been involved in teaching transformative practices, studying them, and really most of the people that we studied were elders, and they were people who had been present for and involved in thousands of people's transformations. And so it was almost like getting together an expert panel to address this issue. And we spent hundreds of hours analyzing their interviews with the help of a team of volunteers and interns who we trained to use a specific method of looking for commonalities among all of those interviews. And that's the research that the book Living Deeply is based on. We also did surveys online with about 2,000 people who told us their stories of transformation in a slightly different way by filling out questionnaires and answering short answer questions. So we've really tried to explore this from a number of different angles, and all through looking for what are the common threads, regardless of who you are or from what walk of life you come, what tradition you're working with or what techniques and methods you're using. And then also having a lot of respect for the fact that each individual method and technique and experience is something that can never sort of be reduced to a generality.
You have in your book the listings of all the people that you interacted with and a little brief description of what they do and their websites, etc., which I think is marvelous because you do have many different perspectives. And I think that the thread of commonality that goes through all of them is absolutely there. It's a shame that too often we get caught up in what I call the costuming effects, and we don't remember the substance. We get caught up with the costumes. But your book has put together some very interesting observations, and one of them, and I'm going to take a quote from Alan Wallace, it's a marvelous irony that without the mind, without observation, without consciousness, you would never have any science, and yet it took 400 years before consciousness actually became a legitimate topic of scientific inquiry. And I thought that that was very appropriate. It is fascinating to me how in today's world we're becoming more aware of the different faces of understanding that there are.
Yeah.
And it takes questioning before you many times will even be able to understand or see. But more than that, it's actually living life. Like you said, so many of the people you interviewed had been around for a while.
Yeah.
They had walked the walk of experience and have been through their own lumpy bumps of life. And what they have discerned has been pretty much boiled down to what I call the real stuff.
Hmm. Yeah, I like the way you say that, the real stuff. That's good. It seemed like most of the people that we interviewed were, and to be fair, these are all bridge builders. These are all people who are very interested in the intersection of science and spirituality, who are very interested in, for the religious folks, in interfaith pursuits. And so they have a particular perspective. And, you know, we didn't interview a lot of fundamentalists. And, in fact, we'd love to do that. We'd love to go out and find more people who are deeply dedicated to transformation and they really think there is one way, and just find out what their story is, too. But in this project, we really did look for people who had a broader view. And most of them said, you know, there's an essential truth. There's an essential reality that shines through no matter what situation you're in. I loved how we use the word costume. You know, no matter what costume you're in, no matter what faith, what tradition, that there is something shining through all of those. And that for each individual person, you may have an easier time accessing this perennial wisdom through one door or through another door, or you may have an easier time in one period of your life accessing it through one door and then at another time in your life accessing it through another door. But that there is some essentialness there that over time and as people matured and got older, they tended to get less involved in all the symbolism and all the accoutrements and the costumes and the words even. And they were very much more interested in just how they could access that reality in everyday life, whether they were sitting in a zendo or in the synagogue or in a beautiful Catholic cathedral or washing the dishes or changing diapers or driving through traffic or buying groceries.
Mm-hmm. Very true. When we're talking about a consciousness transformation, this is another positioning of thought that I really liked by Rachel Naomi Raymond, who said that she liked Proust, and he had said that the voyage of discovery lies not in seeking new vistas, but in having new eyes. Not in seeking new vistas, but having new eyes. And that is really so important because we can look at something every day, and then all of a sudden we see it.
Yeah.
Why? It's because our perception has altered.
Yeah.
Our perception has been brought to that point of awareness where we just didn't see it. How many of us have misplaced something and we're looking right at it and we can't see it to save anything?
Right.
And we go, what's the matter with us? We haven't got our eyes turned on, you might say. Our minds are in one direction, our eyes are looking for something else, and it isn't until we get that focus that we're able to all of a sudden click, oh, this is where I put it. This is what I did.
Yeah, and many of our interviewees would say, in some ways everything changes, and in some ways nothing changes. And what they meant by that was that for most people, it wasn't the specific aspects of their lives that changed. It was their perception of them. It was their perspective
mm-hmm.
on them. And that doesn't mean that one doesn't become healthier or more balanced or find a more sustainable way of living. But it does mean that the ways that most of us sort of effort and struggle and fight to change our lives, you know, if I just lost a few more pounds, if I just went on one more retreat, if I just ate only wheatgrass, you know, all of those changes that we think maybe are the key may not be, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It may be, no matter what situation you're in, that whatever you're seeking is already always here. And it's a shift in perspective to be able to recognize that, particularly in situations that aren't preferable to you.
Oh, I think that's true. And I also think that what you have just said leads into a very good statement. There's no magic wand out there. There's no magic woo-woo that is going to make it happen for you. And I think we are fed, depending on what culture we come from, et cetera, we're fed so many myths
mm-hmm.
that take us on a journey. It's almost as if we come into this experience of, call it school, and we go through all kinds of different courses, and then we discover, gee whiz, I want to do something else. And I've got to find out more about who I am. These
yeah.
courses have been wonderful. They've given me tools to work with, but now what do I do with the tools? And that's where the uniqueness of the self comes in. And it's so fascinating to me when I look at the rhythm of life and I look at what's going on, and I see various things happening, and without our being aware of it, there's often a synchronicity that's going on far beyond our expectations and or observations.
Mm.
But sometimes when we can just be quiet enough to let it just be what it is, we find we get into that rhythm with a synchronicity, and suddenly things start to move. They start to flow. We're not fighting ourselves anymore.
Yeah. I think that's really true, and, you know, even in the times when it feels like not everything is in the flow, because I think one of the things that can happen in the spiritual journey, particularly for people who are a little more experienced, is you start to feel that flow energy, and then you really want that, you know, and you want that to be happening all the time, and then it just sets up as a whole new kind of achievement-oriented thing. And what can happen that's very interesting in some of the later phases, I think, is that you begin to be able to access that place of flow even when life is not flowing, you know, even mm-hmm. when things aren't going the way you think they should be or the way you wish they were. And I think that ends up really being the key, is finding the place of the still point, is one way that people have talked about it, or the unconditioned, the place that doesn't move even though everything else is always changing, always moving. And yes, I also agree that, you know, the ways that when perspective shifts, you do start to notice how things are interconnected, how things are linked, and it does seem that the universe gives you clues as you move forward in your life. You start to notice more synchronicities, you start to notice more beauty, and there's a lot more, I think gratitude is another thing that many of our folks talked about being part of this perspective shift, is approaching the world with a sense of gratitude, with a sense of yes, as opposed to no, or can't I just have it a slightly different than what it is, or can't I always have it a lot different than what it is, ends up being the key to happiness, rather than that treadmill of trying to get everything to line up the way you want it to be.
There is a comment about noetic experiences in your book. What are noetic experiences?
Well, noetic is a Greek word that refers to the type of knowing that is subjective. In other words, it's not the type of knowing where you can observe it externally and measure it and explain it to someone else even. Sometimes it's just a very deep sense of knowing that something is true. It's the type of knowing that you might have when you say, I know I love my child, or another family member, or I know that I'm in the right place, or I know this is a friend that I'm speaking with. So these forms of knowledge have been relegated in our Western society to religion, to sort of kind of the emotional realm, but they've been taken out of sort of the new and improved type of knowledge, is one way you could look at it, where, you know, you've got to be able to measure everything and demonstrate it and prove it and show it. And so we've become quite materialistic in our view of knowledge. And the other kind of inner knowing has been sort of now, it's been undervalued, and there's an overemphasis on the objective observational side. And so I think what part of what the Institute of Noetic Sciences has always tried to do is say, you can bring together both of these ways of knowing into a new way of knowing that's even more powerful than either one alone, that the sum is greater than the whole, you know, the whole is greater than the sum of the parts in some ways, that when you can bring science, which is that, you know, extremely valuable, material, measurable way of looking at the world, together with subjective, authoritative wisdom that comes from within, that we think it's at that intersection that many of the problems that are facing humanity today are going to be solved.
I had to chuckle at a quote by Dean Ornish in your book. Of course, ancient swamis and yogis, rabbis and priests, nuns and monks didn't develop mind-body techniques to get cholesterol down or to perform better at board meetings. Their techniques are tools for transformation and transcendence. And I thought, that was fun. I enjoyed that.
Yeah, it's really true. You know, I was at a meeting not long ago of people who are studying meditation, and in particular the kinds of interventions that you can develop using, that are based on meditation, that might help people with anxiety disorders or depression or addiction. And there has been a lot of success, actually, with these interventions in a very short period of time, easing suffering for people who participate in them. And that's good. But one of the sort of elders in the meeting was saying something along the lines of, let's not forget that this is actually about liberation.
Mm-hmm.
This is not about trying to make a number on your graph move down. And if your number on your graph doesn't move in the right direction, then this doesn't work. You know, this is about liberation. This is about transcendence. And when I say transcendence, I mean that in sort of the most embodied form of the word you could possibly mean. In other words, transcendence not meaning somehow you're going to be catapulted up and out of life's worries, but that instead you're going to find yourself deeper and deeper engaged and connected with life and with who you really are. And that kind of goes back to a point that you made before, where, you know, when people were talking to us about transformation, they said in some ways, you know, even though we use it synonymously with change, and it is kind of change with a capital C, the change is not becoming different from who you are, becoming a different person. And I think a lot of us work very hard trying to become different than who we are, a different kind of person or a different person. And if anything, our teacher said, what's going to happen is that the parts of you that are not authentic will fall away, and you'll become even more deeply in, kind of even more in touch with the most authentic parts of your being. And for some people, that really meant that the unique expression that they are became even richer and more unique. So I just like to make that point that this isn't necessarily becoming a different person or getting out of something. It's actually getting more in, more deeply in to who you are and where you are in every moment, in every day.
I think that the practice of meditation, in my experience, and there's been various levels of that that I've had, but for me, what it does, it sort of turns off the noise and allows you to just be. You don't have to prove anything to anybody. It's your space. It's your place in that moment in time, and it gives clarity, I think. And I really like the term liberation, because in your book there is a sentence, outdated beliefs, thinking patterns that are no longer useful, and dusty old baggage that you no longer need. All of these are revealed by repetitive intentional practice. And I think that sentence in itself contains a lot of wisdom.
Well, it's really true. When you sit quietly over and over and over again, it's like you said before, when something's been sitting there for a long time and you couldn't even see it, when you sit quietly, there's just a natural process of looking around and then saying, wow, why am I carrying this thing around still? I've been carrying this around for years. I think I want to put that down now. And I absolutely think that meditation is a foundational practice. I would say in our survey studies, we ask a question of our survey participants, if you could recommend only one transformative practice, what would it be? And far and away, meditation is the first one that people recommend and that has been a part of more people's transformative journeys than any other practice, with, I think, prayer being sort of a distant second. And you know, you'll be very interested to hear, at the same meeting that I was at, I was with a group of neuroscientists who are studying meditation, and one of the most recent papers that came out in 2008 was reporting on a study that showed that people who received meditation training versus people who didn't, when they were put into an fMRI, which is a brain scanner that looks at the function of the brain during different tasks and conditions, they actually showed that the people who had been trained in meditation had less activation in the part of the brain that is sort of the narrative self-referencing, or in other words, the story that you tell about yourself to put yourself in some place in space and time, versus another way of self-referencing, a whole other part of the brain that's actually your interoceptive awareness, or in other words, your present moment awareness. And so it was almost as though literally that part of the brain that chatters was quieter in people who had been trained.
David Parks Ramaj, he's a minister, also a Zen practitioner, made a comment I thought was quite powerful. What worked yesterday doesn't work today, and what works tomorrow may not work today. Just being present here, just being right here, right now, means that you leave the past and you leave the future. That's a challenge, big challenge. I think for anyone at any point in time or history, that is a challenge, because everything we're indoctrinated with says, no, you've got to move forward, you've got to plan for the future, you need 5,001 goals, You need to carry the past around, remember everything.
Yeah.
And people get so bogged down.
That's right.
They feel like they're suffocating. I've had people say to me, I can hardly breathe. I feel like I just need a place of space. And that's where meditation, because you can do it anytime, any place, anywhere, instantaneously. You don't need any tools, any gimmicks. It's just finding that place and space for the self.
Yeah, and absolutely. I mean, I think that in some ways being in the present is a skill that takes practice. And in other ways, of course, we're always in the present. We're only in the present. So again, mm-hmm. it's that shift in perspective where while my mind might be occupied with the past and it might be occupied with the future, and I think you're absolutely right. We're sort of trained and reinforced to be that way. And just to give everyone a break, we're also pretty hardwired to be that way because in evolution...
Yeah.
Those are the guys who survived were the people who were really learning from their past mistakes and the people who were really strategizing for the future. Where am I going to get my food? How am I going to survive? And that was all very, very useful in that ancient time where we didn't have everything we have now. So it's almost like an evolutionary holdover that we spend quite a bit of time stressing about the future and reflecting and ruminating on the past. And there was a great exercise that might be good for people to do over the holidays because in some ways, if you do have a little bit of time off, you can let go a little bit. And I was at a workshop called Falling Awake by Dave Ellis. I like that phrase, falling awake.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, as you go to your meal today, what I want you to do with your group is not talk at all about the past and not talk at all about the future, only be in the present during one meal. And it was so amazingly difficult for the first 15 minutes. I mean, people were literally silent because they didn't know what to say. You know, usually it's like, well, where do you work? And how many children do you have? And where are you going tomorrow? And where were you yesterday? And what trips have you gone on? So we were all sitting there for about 15 minutes. And finally someone said, this food is delicious.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and everyone started to say, yes, isn't this food delicious? And look outside, the sun is shining. And it was amazing to have that group experience of being in the present moment and very for most people, too. So I think it's important to let people know to stick with it a little bit because in the beginning, the unfamiliar can be quite uncomfortable. And then over time, it becomes such a place of refuge. And obviously, all the potential resides in the present moment because it's the only place where anything is ever happening.
That's true. Well, I know we're just about out of time, Cassandra, and this book is called Living Deeply, The Art and Science of Transformation in Everyday Life. This was research that was done over 10 years at the Institute of Noetic Sciences. There's all kinds of information regarding people from various backgrounds, and all of this is documented. I think you'd find it very, very interesting reading. Why not give a gift to yourself? Because we're very close to a new year, and what a wonderful gift to be able to give, to be able to understand where you are. You are in your right and perfect place right now, and if you take whatever needs to be taken care of, you're going to have a transformation that will be unexcelled. Now, this is through the Institute of Noetic Science, Cassandra, and I'm sure this is up on Amazon.com, but where could people go to get more information?
We have a website specifically for the project and the book. It's called livingdeeply.org. And to learn more about the Institute of Noetic Sciences, you can also go to www.noetic.org. Livingdeeply.org actually has chat rooms. It's got an online course that you can take that has information that's different than what's in the book. And then I'd also like to mention the Living Deeply DVD, which is a set of 9 of the teachers we interviewed leading 10-minute practices from their own tradition, which is a really great thing for little reminders, short practices that you can do at home in your living room, things that you can take to a study group or a church group or a community group. And I think that's a nice resource as well.
This is Donna Sebo. My guest today has been Cassandra Veaton. Cassandra, thank you so much for being with me, and happy holidays to you. Be sure to go to the websites livingdeeply.org or noeticscience.org. Or is that Noetic Institute?
It's just noetic.org, N-O-E-T-I-C.org.
Noetic.org. Okay, well, thank you ever so much. Again, happy holidays.
You're welcome, and thank you for your show, Donna. It's also a gift.
Thank you very much, Cassandra. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to be taking a break. Don't go away. We're going to be right back.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, TTAP.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's TTAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717, TTAP.com.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo, and hey, telephone lines are open. If you'd like to give me a buzz, I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Here are the telephone numbers to call into, toll free for you. If you'd like for me to just give you some insight about yourself or maybe someone else or a particular condition, hey, give me a buzz at 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. 888-815-9756. That's Canadian and U.S. That's 888-815-9756. And also we have a direct line of 530-876-3222. So give me a call if you'd like to chat. By the way, don't forget, we've got the countdown. Next week we'll be doing the drawing for 3 lucky people that will have a $100 plus value gift from Teresa Tapp, who is a guest on our show. And this is going to enable you to get fit and fabulous in 2009. Oh, what a great way to start a year. Believe me, I've been just absolutely thrilled with the results that I've gotten. And it just keeps going on and on. So I'm just highly pleased for any of you that would like to come in and participate in this email drawing that's going to be done. Send me an email, and the email you send it to is donna@delphiinternational.com, donna@delphiinternational.com. Put in the subject line, the Donna Sebo Show, and the code DSS-30, DSS-30. The reason I need that code is because I have hundreds of emails that I have to go through, and I'm not exaggerating. So if that DSS-30, along with the Donna Sebo Show, is in that subject line, I'll know it's for the drawing. We're going to be going to a caller in just a moment, so don't forget,
anybody can be a participant in this, and I'm taking all of these emails. We're putting them in the email pot. The drawing will be done next week, and what's in this wonderful gift package is a skin brushing system that tones the skin. If you're trimming down, you're losing weight, you don't want a bunch of saggy skin, this stuff is really good. It works the entire lymphatic system. Also, you get the 15-minute workout package. And she's got some other goodies she's going to be sending along with it. It just keeps getting bigger and bigger. So just send me that email at donna@delphiinternational.com. Only a few more days before we have that drawing, and I'd love to see you win. Tell your friends and send it along. Don't forget the Donna Sebo Show and DSS 30 in the subject line. Welcome, caller, first name or initial, and where are you calling from?
Hi, Donna. Happy holidays. This is JoJo from Los Osos.
JoJo, I'm sorry. Where are you calling from?
Los Osos.
And where is that?
It's on the central coast of California near San Luis Obispo.
Ah. You're enjoying warmer temperatures. We're freezing up here in the Pacific Northwest.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yes. Third snowstorm is going to be coming through. We haven't had this much snow in years. It's really gorgeous, though. Absolutely gorgeous. And happy holidays to you, too. My goodness, it's hard to believe Christmas is day after tomorrow.
Yeah. Fast.
Just amazingly so. And then, bingo, we're going to blink and we're going to be in a brand new year. Hard to believe.
Mm-hmm.
Well, JoJo, let's get down to business with you. The first thing that I am observing is an intensity. And I am wanting to use the word intention. And there is this strength that I feel that you have been cultivating and sculpting into a level of refinement, so that as 2009 starts building its momentum after February 23rd for you, you're going to be putting this intention really right out in front. Not that it's not there within you at this time, but it seems, again, like you're sculpting, you're directing how you use this intention. You're being very thoughtful. You're not wasting words. You're not wasting energy with things, people, places, situations. You're not going to do that. This has to come forward in the right way. And this is very wise of you, because by February the 23rd, it seems to me that you have put everything into its proper positioning. You have the self-assurance and the confidence of application, and then your direction is going to be very clear. And as I look at this, I feel that this is going to affect your life on multiple levels. It's going to affect your life in a working environment. It's going to affect your life economically. It's going to affect your life with a sense of clarity relative to relationships and how you want to work with them, both on a personal level as well as a professional level. So all of the stress and the striving that you have been evolving through is moving into a positioning where it's really going to have some clout. You're going to be able to utilize it. So if I were to use a word to describe 2009, I would say efficient. Efficient application. Actually, two words. Efficient application. And this is how you are going to be doing things. You are not going to waste your time with anything, anyone, that is not going to be of value. The word no is going to be used by you frequently so that you keep yourself on track. And I think that that is really superb. Really, really superb.
Wow.
What question do you have for me today?
Well, what's interesting is that, you mentioned everything's kind of building until then, and definitely, I definitely feel that. You know, just discipline is my word right now.
Mm-hmm.
It came to me today just thinking of my finances. I was like, I kept going, okay, when's it all going to, and then I just realized, like, I'm free.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it came from within. It's like, oh, that's what money means to me. So is there anything along those lines that I can keep working with? Because
Think when it comes to money, keep in mind, money is a medium of exchange. If you were in another culture, it might be cows. Thank heavens we're using dollar bills. You know, it's just one of these things when it comes to money that there is the need to understand that it's just a tool of exchange. So what you're wanting to do is have that flow of exchange that gives you what you would consider a level of financial freedom so that you have the option of choices. And there is no limit to what that can be. You need to be a wise custodian so that as, just like a, you know, a good farmer with his cows, you just don't want to have one cow. You want to be sure that you have, you know, you have a bull in there somewhere and you've got a few cows and you have to think about how you want to manage it. And if you were using cows instead of dollar bills, you'd say, well, how many cows do I want? Do I want to have a small herd of 12 with a bull? Do I want to have 15,000, 20,000? What do I want to do? And I know that that's sort of a cartoonish description to give to you, but I think you can get the concept of, that I'm trying to get across.
Yeah.
It's how you want it. And anyone can say, well, I want to have millions of dollars and so on and so forth. But understand that part of what the evolution of life experience involves is an awareness of custodianship, that what we have is what we have in any given moment. How are you going to manage it? What are you going to do with it? So what I'd like to see you do is play some imaginary games. The mind is a phenomenal instrument. And if you have certain aspirations that represent a financial level of independence to you, then why don't you look at, well, let's say maybe it's $500,000 a year. All right, what would you do with that $500,000 a year? Well, some people might say, I'd go out and I'd buy myself a yacht and I would travel to Paris and I would do this, that, or the other. And you might say, well, I think I'd like to do some things. And maybe you'd break it down. And maybe after you worked with that $500,000, you'd say, holy Moses, that's not very much money if I really want to look at $500,000. And then you say, well, how could I use it? What would I do? Play games with it. Just have fun with it.
That makes sense.
And yep. See what you do with it. Because it is, you can't take any of it with you, but if you are going to be in that positioning of custodianship, how are you going to manage it? And make a game out of it.
Yeah.
Have fun with it.
That makes sense. And can I ask one quick question?
Quick like a bunny.
Yeah. The February 23rd date you gave me before, mm-hmm. is that coming just coming through the ethers, or does that have to do with some astrology something?
No, I am not an astrology expert.
Okay.
It was a number that was given to me.
Okay. It's
so
just interesting.
It just seems to be a date that was given to me. It's because you've got some other things that are going on prior to the 23rd of February, so you're having
yeah.
some closure.
Yeah.
So that 23rd of February is like a kickoff date.
Okay. I'm just letting you, that's my sister's birthday, so I just...
Oh, for heaven's sake.
Yeah, so that was a funny date you picked.
That's fun. Well, you have a wonderful holiday season.
You too, Donna. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Bye.
Take care. Bye-bye. This is Donna Siebel, and again, don't forget about that contest that's going to be coming up, because this is a drawing next week for being fit and fabulous in 2009. And, oh, I've got some wonderful things to share with you after the new year. I've got some good things happening. So there's just so many wonderful people I have an opportunity to interact with, and it's just such a pleasure to be able to share it with you on the show. So be sure and tell your friends about the drawing, and then they can participate too. All right, and I wanted to let you know before we go on break that tomorrow it's going to be Christmas music. We've got so many wonderful things that we're going to be sharing with you. Ron Clancy is going to be my guest. And I know we've got another caller, but we're going to take a break. Caller, stay with me. Don't hang up. We'll be getting to you right away. This is Donna Siebel. We're going to take a break here for just a moment, and then we'll be back to talk with you. 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756. We'll be right back.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Siebel. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Siebel's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay only $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 1-800-872-8852. That's 1-800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Gedrose. Buy it today. 1-800-872-8852.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo, and before I go to my caller, I want to let you know tomorrow we are going to have Christmas music. We're going to just have a wonderful, wonderful show. And then on Thursday, because it's Christmas, we're going to have a special that I put together, and it's going to be just totally with Christmas stories and other things. So I hope you'll be able to tune into that and listen. If you're making cookies or you're having company, maybe you'll be too busy, but I'm going to be with my family and friends on Christmas. And I want you to know that this is made available for you. Let's go to our caller that has been waiting so patiently. Welcome to the show. First name or initial, and where are you calling from?
Teresa from Phoenix.
Hi, Teresa. Happy holidays to you.
Hi. Happy holidays.
And, Teresa, first thing right off the bat, I want to say I think you need an eye exam. There is a pulling sensation that I'm feeling in my right eye, and it's a very odd, it's not painful, it's just a strange pressure that I feel from the muscles of the eye stressing themselves. So it could be you need just an ever so slight adjustment in a lens that would allow the muscles to work properly, and I think this may primarily be related to a computer. So if you're doing a lot of work on the computer, you want to be sure, one thing, that you have adequate light going on around you, and two, that you have your eyes checked, because you may need something like a special pair of glasses, maybe that have a little bit of a tint to it, and that allow the eye to work more in harmony with the screen. And be sure when you go to your eye doctor that you tell him the size screen that you're using with the computer, and, you know, whatever other things regarding color, anything else that he might be interested in knowing about, because it definitely has an effect on the eyes. You are going to be doing some traveling, and it's not just because of the holidays. I do think there are some meetings that are going to be coming up, and you're going to wonder what you should be prepared to deal with. And I would say prepare yourself for as much as you possibly can, and be relaxed before you go into the meetings, and just allow things to flow. Be willing to ask questions and see what you can find out. Take good notes, and just know that whatever information you have to share, give it to that person. If you don't have everything there, set up a time when you can call them or email them or whatever you need to do. But remember, your one-on-one interaction with people is your ace in the hole. That's what I would say to you. You're building relationships, and that's important. What did you want to ask me, Teresa?
Well, I have a house that I went and saw, and it's on a street that's named Oliver Circle. And I wondered if you saw me being able to get into that house.
It doesn't seem like it's a real large house. How big is it?
1,200 square feet.
Right. Okay, that's why I said it's not a very large house. There's going to be an opportunity for you to be able to acquire the house, but I would say most importantly, you need to really be able to look at the house as far as condition goes, because I think there is some deterioration under a back area of the house. So you should have a checklist of some type that you can utilize and go through the house with. And if there is a house inspector, I think that's fine, but you really should do the check, as much checking as you can on your own. You've had a very good opportunity to get this house, but I do think that there are four other people that are also going to have an interest in it. So when you're looking at this house, look at it from a positioning that it might make for a good rental at some time in the future. But be alert to the fact that this house, you've got a 50-50 chance. And I'm saying it because there are these other four people, and I'm seeing someone that has a large cash deposit that they might be able to put down on the house. And in this situation, cash will talk. So that's just something you need to be aware of and alert to. But with this house, in seeing it and evaluating it, make sure that you've got all your facts in order and that you really know what might have to be done with some renovation or repair work. That is something you need to be very clear about, because this is not a brand new house.
No, no. And I planned on getting a contractor in there to look at things. It was built in the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
But if somebody else were to come put money down, you know, I would just continue looking. But it's this person that I know, and she's telling me that she wants me to have the house because she likes who I am and that kind of thing. And I like the house. I like it a lot. But I knew that there were things that I needed to...
Yes, you need to check this house out very carefully, because let's say the house, and I'm just going to use some round numbers, let's say it sold for $155,000, which I know that's really stretching it a bit. But let's just say they did that. Well, you might find that with this house, if you did a good evaluation, you have got some deterioration and repair work and upgrade work that's going to take you maybe a good $30,000 to $40,000 to fix.
Yeah.
And that's okay as long as you look at the relative value of what's around you. Would it be worth, if you did acquire it, putting that kind of money into the house to upgrade it? And that's something you have to look at. Because I think this house is long overdue. So I'm not trying to discourage you. I want to empower you with an understanding of what you need to do so that should this opportunity really work out for you, and I'd be very careful about an agreement with this gal. Very careful.
I know. We've had agreements before and other things, and it's just, oh my gosh, it's turned into things really twisted. But, you know, she called me on the house, and I went and looked at it, and she is asking $150,000, and I was going to offer $100,000. But I told her I'd have to get a contractor in there to take a look at stuff. And
right. Teresa, hon, I'm running out of time. I've got to go.
Thank you.
Follow your instincts here. Okay? You're on target there. Follow what you know you need to do.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Happy holiday to you. Bye-bye,
Merry
Teresa.
Christmas. Bye-bye.
This is Donna Sebo. My goodness, this hour's just flown by. I'm so delighted you were able to join me. Now, don't forget, tomorrow we are going to be having all kinds of subject matter about Christmas, and I'm looking forward to sharing that hour with you. Don't forget, sign up for Teresa's drawing. If you want to be fit and fabulous in 2009, 15 minutes or less, other good stuff, hey, send that email to Donna@DelphiInternational.com, Donna@DelphiInternational.com, and be sure to put in the subject line the Donna Sebo Show and DSS30 so I know that this is for the drawing. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. You're going to have a fabulous day. Christmas is just around the corner. Be safe, be well, have fun. And live in the moment, because now is what you've got. Talk to you tomorrow, same time, same place, right here at bbsradio.com. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.